never stop to wonder when watching my TV why we who do the work so seldom see.
Now I'm wondering why we're blacked out or portrayed as troublemakers or always in the background when on screen. Work and TV.
Welcome to Working TV. I'm David Chudnovsky. Join us for our special series produced with the Labor Environmental Alliance Society. Today we're looking at how a group of union health and safety activists helped us all breathe a little easier. When TransLink switched to a lower grade of diesel fuel to cut their budget, workers documented the negative health effects for them and for the public. The Union Health and Safety Committee got a return to a cleaner burning fuel, and they haven't stopped there. Dave Norville, a mechanic at Coast Mountain Bus Company, is here to give us the latest news in health and environmental protection from Canadian auto workers, Local 2200. I understand there's good news at your workplace. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, there's two things that are happening that are really fantastic. One is that we're doing a toxin review of all our products. It's a two-pronged attack, one which is we have a summer student which is has a PhD, and he's starting in heavy fleet maintenance and looking at products used there. We're also, the second half is we're using computer system to do a search of all the products through the MSDS sheets, and in anything that has a carcinogen, an endocrine blocker, or a sensitizer, we're compiling lists and looking at replacing those products with less toxic. Also, coming in fall, in September, we're starting a new environmental program with Coast Mountain Bus Company. They'll be set up very similar to a safety committee. There'll be a represented from the union, from upper management at each property. We'll deal with a lot of environmental issues at a local level. Then we meet quarterly for any anything that's come up that deals with the whole company-wide problem rather than just locally, and then we'll be able to work on finding solutions for that. So it's good news all around.
It sounds like you're able to cooperate with the company on these issues.
The company is fairly forward-thinking, and that's kudos to them for seeing the wisdom of doing this. It's better for us, better for the employees, the staff, and for the general public.
Dave, can you give us one example of a toxic product that your colleagues have to work with?
I guess a good example would probably be cleaning solutions as in the solvents for degreasing and cleaning parts. It's probably one of the best examples. We had one product that was very high in a lot of toxics, and we were able to get it removed and replaced with something that's much less toxic, cleaner, and more environmentally friendly.
What advice do you have for other workers who want to protect themselves and the public from toxins?
I'd recommend taking the Lee's Toxics in the Workplace program. It was an excellent program. It helped us give us a focus and a direction as to where to go. And it's an excellent course for anybody who's interested in it.
Thanks very much.
Coming up, more with Dave Norville, including how they got rid of that number two diesel fuel, and a discussion of the safety and health risk to workers and the public from exposure to carcinogens and toxins with May Burrows and Larry Stoffman of the Labor Environmental Alliance Society.
Hello. Here we are with Dave Norville, who is a mechanic who works for Coast Mountain and a member of CAW Local 2200.
Yes.
And we're also here with Larry Stoffman, who is a director of the Labor Environmental Alliance, and my name is May Burrows, and I'm the executive director of the Labor Environmental Alliance. And we're here right now to talk about one of the most pervasive carcinogens that's actually in our society, and that is diesel fumes. Dave works at one of the yards where they do the maintenance on the buses, and you've become, as a health and safety activist, a real expert on diesel. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about this diesel that we hear about all the time and that we probably smell all the time.
Well, maybe I'll go back a little bit on our history. We work around the stuff all the time. You become used to it. It's not a, it's just considered part of the job. But our big change came to us was when the TransLink decided to switch to a number two fuel from a number one. Basically because of a cost saving at the time with funding being short. unfortunately, at the time, they didn't really look at, I don't think it went to the board with very good information. They weren't given everything, I think, that would have made the board make a smart decision. So they went ahead. They switched to a number two, and then unfortunately that was when we started to see a change. We'd been running number one, I guess, for about 10 or 12 years. It had been never too much of a problem. But it was still, you know, you always knew it was there and around. But once we switched, the number of incidences amongst our guys was just too much to ignore. We had problems with people that were asthmatic having to use their puffers. We had, you know, people getting sore throats, runny eyes, and headaches. Most of the stuff was short term. If they were removed from the area, you get rid of it, then the symptoms would dissipate. But the problem being that is, if we kept on using the number two, it would have it would tend to sensitize the guys to the point maybe they wouldn't be able to work around it. So at that point, we started trying to convince the company and TransLink to go back to the number one. And in the long run, eventually it did. It only made sense. The change was phenomenal. I mean, the guys breathed easier, pun intended. The yards were so much better.
So just to back up, you talk about number one and number two diesel. Mm-hmm. What's the difference between number one and number two diesel? The price is one difference. What's the difference in price between number one and number two diesel?
Well, the problem with diesel fuel is really there's a wide variety. It's like saying scotch or tea. Diesel fuel can come from 100 different locations in the world, can have different sulfur contents. So you start with a base crude oil that they pull out of the ground. Different locations around the world have different qualities and effects. Once they distill it, basically, which is what they do when they crack it off, they're taking different levels. You're taking different levels. You can only, from a crude or barrel of crude oil, you can only develop so much number one diesel, so much number two, so much gasoline. You can, by changing a little bit, you can get a little more of one or a little more of another, but there's only so much you can get from a specific barrel. So when you get to number one, it's a higher grade fuel. It's a cleaner fuel. It's higher up as they distill it off or crack it off, it's higher up. And again, it has less, I don't know what the word would be.
Fewer impurities.
And it's just a cleaner fuel. So as you go down, you're increasing possibly the sulfur content. You might have more. The calorific value goes up lower down than you get in the bigger bunker fuels. So, I mean, once you go from one to two, there's a change. That was the big problem that we had. We've never really been able to pinpoint exactly what it was, but the smell, right away you could smell it. It was different. It just didn't smell the same.
So you probably need to describe, because people wouldn't be able to get a picture of this without sort of really thinking about it, where you actually work. You work at Oak Ridge, don't you?
Yes.
How many buses are in Oak Ridge at a time, and you know, what's the environment like there, and do they have to run the buses in order to do the mechanical work on them?
Well, yeah, anytime you work around diesel fuel or diesel exhaust, the big problem is for people that are doing maintenance on them, people that are working in, say, a loading dock or any area and confined spaces such as inside a garage. At Oak Ridge, there's approximately about 160, 175 buses. One of the things that you have unusual with a bus company is the fact that you're going to have them all leaving in a fairly short period of time. Of course, you start your morning shift, so you have to get them all out and they have to all get going. Most other yards, for example, like a works yard or somebody else, may have 30, 40, 50 pieces of equipment, but they're not starting them all up in a fairly short period of time and sending them out. Again, the colder the engines are, then of course they produce more particulate matter and more gases because they're not up at their peak operating temperatures. So the startups in the morning were probably one of the worst times that we had, with more, especially in colder weather. Quite often we had to pre-start the buses during the night, or we would start them earlier than the guys to give them a chance to warm up, to heat them for the guys to take out. So the yard would become very, very thick with smoke at that point.
So I know that out in the, you know, the general public, there was a concern about using the number two diesel in the Greater Vancouver regional area for all the buses, but there wasn't a very we weren't able to stop it. I think that the reason that it got changed was because of the health and safety grievances and the whole process that you went through. Could you describe what that process is? Because what that ended up being is adding greatly to sort of the public campaign to get back to number one diesel.
Well, what did you do?
Well, basically, as a group and as a union, I mean, at first, obviously, as well as being a mechanic, I'm also a first aid attendant at the location. Of course, we had a lot of guys talking about it. The smells were very pervasive. We could smell it. The guys were having problems with it. But at that point, to talk about it doesn't do anything. At that point, we started having to document it. By documenting it, we saw a first aid attendant, had them write everything down, mention what their symptoms and signs were, had them, explain where they were working, what conditions were like in the shop. Was it a cold day? Was it windy? All these things came into effect as to making it more worse. Was it a cold day? Was there very little air movement in the shop or in the yard? Was it early in the morning? Times that would explain more why it's doing it then. Once the guy started reporting all the problems, of course, obviously the company takes more of an interest. I mean, there is a written record at that point, and you have to obviously deal with it. More than just talking about it amongst the guys doesn't really do you any good. You have to prove that there is a problem. And that was the start of what we did. Other gentlemen were getting to the point that they actually saw their own doctors and started WCB, would have to say that the reason that they were there was because of the fuel and that that was affecting them. And from there, some WCB claims. I believe at the end we ended up with two were accepted at Oak Ridge.
Great. Yeah. I mean, so Union Health and Safety Committee, in this case CAW Local 2200, did the work of a good Union Health and Safety Committee and got people to document the kind of physical problems that they were having. And what that ended up doing is making a real change for the whole city and
yes.
for everybody's air. You know, Larry here has done a lot of that kind of work, and maybe you could comment on how important it is for unions to do things like that, because it changes the health and safety for everybody.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think the whole issue of diesel is a great example in what they did in the yards there, because a lot of things started coming together at the same time. I mean, for years, several decades, there's been concern about diesel fumes, diesel emissions, and their impacts on people's health, both in the workplace and out of the workplace. You've mentioned some of the chronic respiratory problems that people experience, and some of the most vulnerable people in the public experience children, older people, people with respiratory conditions that are negatively affected by diesel emissions. But more than that, there's a great concern about the carcinogens, the cancer-causing components of the diesel exhaust. And it's well known that there are quite a few. Some of the most potent carcinogens that we know about are a component of diesel exhaust. It first became a real issue in underground mining and the use of diesel underground, because it was a confined space, but you have the same thing or a similar kind of concern in a yard like that where you're starting up that number of engines, and or in a shop where it's even more confined.